weekend here in Chicago. NBA All-Star Weekend. I went to the Slam Dunk Contest last night. I mean, the energy over on the West Side is just fantastic. We thought we'd start today's show, since the NBA All-Star Game is in Chicago, we'd start with someone that knows the game. Our first guest played in the NBA for 16 years, 6'9", 245. You probably remember him when he was only 18 years old. He was selected by the Indiana Pacers with the 25th overall pick in the 1998 NBA draft. Spent six seasons in Indiana, and he's in town this weekend. It is Al Harrington. Al, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Are you excited? Are you excited for the All-Star game this weekend?
Yeah, it's always good to see the world's best, you know, get out there and get after it. And I think this year they probably going to play a little bit harder than they, you know, usually played in the past, which would be a really good game.
Well, it's going to be all about Kobe today. And we wanted to have you on because Kobe came out at 18 years old in 1996. You came out at 18 years old in 1998. You both had similar paths, and I wanted you to kind of talk about that. And did you and Kobe have conversations about that back in the day?
Yeah, I didn't, I didn't know Kobe when I was young like that. It's funny, the first time I ever met him, I was walking into the University of Maryland's gym for a tournament. And when I walked in, I like pushed the door in on him. And, you know, obviously he was a rising senior at that time. I was going into my sophomore year, but, you know, he was just like, "What's up? How you doing? I'm Kobe Bryant." He's like so professional, like as a 17-year-old, like the way he introduced himself to me, you know, back then. But, you know, when I made my jump, the guys I was able to talk to was guys like, you know, Kevin Garnett and Tracy McGrady. I didn't get a chance to, you know, talk to Kobe about, you know, the transition and stuff.
Right. Your rookie year, you came out in 1998, as you mentioned. It was the Bulls' last run in their championship years. You're a kid out of high school playing against Michael Scottie, Dennis here in Chicago, and then Glenn Rice, Timmy Hardaway, Shaq. I mean, there were so many great players. You're an 18-year-old kid. How intimidated were you?
I was very intimidated. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I wasn't even intimidated. I was just more in awe, you know, that, you know, guys that I've been seeing, you know, obviously playing on TV and in movies and on video games, is like, now they're my peers. And, you know, like, I'm expected to, like, try to stop these guys. You know what I'm saying? So it was more being in awe, but, you know, it wears off fast, because if you sit and you be in awe too long, you'll be out the league. So,
right.
You know, you just got to figure it out and just keep pushing.
You played with Reggie Miller, one of the greatest players of all time. What was he like?
He was a great teammate. You know, he was, you know, very old school. You know, my first 2 years, you know, he gave me the blues, man. He was tough on me, but, you know, it was tough love, because at the end of the day, we ended up having a great relationship. And, you know, after seeing him go to, you know, all the Reggies behind me, I know it wasn't personal. It was just tough. You know, you had to earn his respect. But, you know, great guy, obviously huge trash talker. At the end of the day, you know, very efficient out there on the court. So it was great to be able to play with, you know, a Hall of Famer like him.
I know we're on the radio and you're going to have to clean it up a little bit, but what type of trash talking was he trash talking on the court? What would Reggie say to get people going?
I mean, who knows, but, you know, obviously you're right. I can't do it on the radio, but, you know, there are a lot of, you know, words that started with M's and B's and, you know, stuff like that.
Yes, I understand that. He always had tape. He always had the tape on his fingers. Was that just because he wanted to be cool? I thought maybe that had something to do to help him with his three-pointers. Why did he have the tape on his fingers?
It was because he was such a big Michael Jackson fan. And, you know, Michael Jackson used to wear the tape on his fingers when he performed or whatever.
Yes.
So Reggie started wearing the tape,
what?
And then he perfected it, being able to shoot the basketball with tape on his fingers.
Oh, my gosh. We're talking to Al Harrington, who played 16 years in the NBA. Are you still 6'9", 245?
Yeah, I'm 6'9", but not no longer 245.
Can you still got a little game left or no?
You know, for the right price, I can go out there and get it done, but, you know, I don't think nobody's willing to pay that price anymore.
No, nobody wants to do that anymore. You know, you mentioned when you played in the NBA, Reggie Miller, you had to earn his respect. Do we see that today with players? I feel like, I don't know. It seemed more competitive back in the 90s, the early 2000s, because the NBA, you had to earn respect. When you played, you had to slash and drive. Everything's now three-pointers, and it's about me, the player. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, it's definitely a different game, man. It's just, you know, now, you know, back, you know, when I came in the league, like, nobody's focused on their brand and all these other opportunities away from the game. And, you know, the more than an athlete thing is obviously really taking off. And it's a beautiful thing to see it, but it also, you know, I feel like doesn't allow the players to really focus on their craft like 100% like we used to or whatever. But,
right,
you know, that's just a sign of the times, and, you know, it is what it is. But I still feel like the overall play is really high. But, you know, from a competitive standpoint, I think it's definitely something lacking there. But, you know, we'll just see how it all plays itself out.
When you came out in 98, did you feel like you had some of the old and some of the new? Because the new, of course, Kobe and Shaq, but the old, you played against Michael, and Larry Bird was your coach in Indiana.
Yeah, I felt like it was a lot of old for me. You know, it wasn't too much new at that time. You know, when I came in, like you said, you know, Michael's on his way out. You know, Karl Malone still playing, John Stockton. So it was just a different game, and I felt like, you know, they required us to play a certain way. You know what I'm saying? So it stayed old school for a while until, you know, small ball came in effect. And then obviously the league, you know, changed, you know, their stance because they wanted higher scoring. So they took all the physicality out of the game. So
right.
I think, you know, some of those things, you know, play into it, not just the players just saying, like, you know what, we don't want to play this way anymore. You know, the players were kind of pushed to play in this style of basketball.
Was Larry a good coach, Larry Bird?
Yes, he was a great. He was more of a game coordinator, man. Larry was never a guy that, you know, wrote on the board, you know, X's and O's ever. Never someone wants to draw up a play, like, ever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he just managed the game. You know what I'm saying? He kept a good flow out there. You know, he held everybody accountable. So I think that those are more of his stronger attributes, which made him a good coach. I mean, they won a lot of games. He went to the finals. So, you know, you have to stick your hat off to him and say that he was a good coach, even though it was a short period of time.
We're talking with Al Harrington. He played in the NBA for 16 years in town for the All-Star game today. Al, I'm going to have you hold on, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Viola Brands, okay?
Okay.
All right.
All right. That is Al Harrington. More with him next on 720 WGN. All eyes on Chicago this weekend. NBA All-Star game is happening later on tonight. On the phone with a 16-year NBA veteran, Al Harrington, who spent many years in Indiana. Did you enjoy that, playing for the Pacers?
Yeah, I had a good experience there. You know, we won a lot of games. Was able to go from, you know, a super veteran team to a really young team with just a couple key vets that allow, you know, us young players, myself, Jermaine O'Neal, Jonathan Bender, Ron Artest, Brad Miller, an opportunity to, you know, grow up and, you know, establish ourselves in the league. So, you know, really enjoyed my time there. Had a lot of success.
Tell us about Viola Brands, your company. What is this all about, and how did you get the name Viola?
Yeah, so Viola, you know, it started in 2011, really, with my first encounter with cannabis, you know, from a medicinal perspective, and it was through my grandmother. You know, my grandmother had come to see me play at the end of my first season when I was playing for the Nuggets, and, you know, she was suffering from a bunch of stuff, and one of the things that she said that stuck out to me was, you know, she suffered from glaucoma. And, you know, I just explained to her some stuff that I was reading in the newspaper about how cannabis helped glaucoma patients, and, you know, was able to convince her to try it. And, you know, the day that she tried it, you know, I went to go check on her about an hour and a half later. And when I went downstairs, knocked on the door, her back was to the door, and she was looking down. And I was just like, Grandma, how you feeling? And she turned around, and she was crying tears. And she was like, I'm healed. She's like, you know, I haven't been able to read the words of my Bible in over 3 years.
Oh, my gosh.
So when I saw that happen, obviously, you know, it really changed the way I felt about cannabis and inspired me to learn a lot more. And, you know, I got to the point, you know, probably like 6 to 8 months later where I was like, you know what, this is something that is a legacy. You know, like, you know, I could be a part of, like, you know, really helping save people's lives and create opportunities for people and different things like that. And it inspired me to become a caregiver in the state of Colorado where all of my patients either had HIV or cancer. And, you know, three years later, we established ourselves as a company, and we named it Viola, which is my grandmother's name.
Wow. Tell me about that conversation with your grandma where you said, Grandma, you need to try pot. How did that go?
You know, obviously, you know, because I was calling it cannabis because I was reading something from the paper. So finally she asked me, like, well, what is cannabis? And I told her it was marijuana weed. She's like, she called it reefer. She's like, and she told me to find out. She's like, boy, I'm not smoking no reefer. There's no way that's going to help me. But it took me a little bit more convincing. And, you know, I always say I was God at work because, you know, obviously, you know, I tell people all the time this industry chose me, you know, because I grew up in Orange, New Jersey during the war on drugs era, the DARE era.
Oh, yeah.
And I was always definitely afraid of cannabis and, you know, thinking that it was a gateway drug. And also, you know, seeing, you know, kids, the older guys in my neighborhood being, you know, locked up and incarcerated behind it all the time.
Sure.
You know, it was something I just, you know, was afraid of. You know what I mean? And I stayed away from it at all costs. But when I got to the NBA and seen some of my teammates use cannabis and they were some of the best players on my team is when I first started to, you know, kind of realize that, you know, maybe I've been being lied to. But, you know, that definitely fueled my advocacy, you know what I'm saying, just trying to allow people to really get a chance to unlock all the unbelievable, wonderful benefits of the cannabis plant. And, you know, that's now my new mission, is trying to, you know, like I said, change the stigma.
Well, Al, that's where it started. It started with athletes, and it started with cancer patients for medicinal purposes. Because, you know, cancer patients would get sick on chemo, and that's, you know, that's how it snowballed. And then they found out, wait a second, pot's not as bad for some people as you think it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's just what it is. It's just like, you know, we think about all the other opioids that are being prescribed to us, you know, in some instances, irresponsibly. And, you know, as much as players deal with pain, and, you know, I tell people all the time, like, if you're a real athlete, whether you're a professional athlete, weekend warrior, whatever, your body's never 100%. There's right. always something that's hitting and bothering you, right? And, you know, doctors, the first thing they do is they prescribe you some type of, you know, medication, you know? And obviously yeah. there's always harmful side effects, but with cannabis, being that it's all natural, I just feel like it's an alternative way that people should just have access to be able to manage pain and use it for recovery and different things like that without, obviously, all the other harmful side effects of what we're using now.
You played in the NBA for 16 years at the highest level. How much pain were you in, and were doctors prescribing you painkillers?
Yeah, I mean, I was more of an anti-inflammatory baby. So I used to, you know, always have something bothering me, whether it was a plantar fasciitis, knee pain, back pain, whatever. And, you know, I used to take two anti-inflammatories in the morning and one at night. You know, and I did it for almost 7 years straight.
Oh, really?
And that was the only way that I could, you know, keep my body feeling good enough that I can go out there and continue to train at a maximum level and then obviously be able to go out there and compete. And, you know, I knew that there were harmful side effects, but at the end of the day, I had no other choice, right? You know what I'm saying? I always tell people, like, a lot of us as athletes, we're first generation, you know, significant money in our families.
Right.
So we have to really put it on the line, you know what I'm saying, to make as much as we can while we can so that we hopefully can set our family up so that we don't ever have to struggle again. And, you know, we kind of get forced into some of these situations because, you know, if you're not out there on the court or on the field, they can't pay you. They can't justify paying
right.
So it's tough, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I just feel like, you know, the more research we do, the more, you know, players become, you know, open up about their cannabis use, I think that we'll start to humanize the plant and, you know, change people's perspective.
Well, Al, you mentioned that you took ibuprofen almost every single day. Isn't that what happened to Alonzo Mourning? He took too many and his kidney had kidney failure. He had to get a kidney transplant.
Yep, I mean, that's there you go. You know what I mean? And at
right.
the end of the day, you know, I'm not sure what he was dealing with, and obviously maybe he was in a bunch of pain, but, you know, I just feel like cannabis is a way, you know, that, you know, we can use to, you know, mitigate some of the issues that we deal with. And like I said, just from a, you know, more of an all-natural plant, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, has a lot of benefits, you know, especially towards that. Towards people, especially when you talk about, you know, managing.
Right. We're talking with Al Harrington, 16 years in the NBA. So marijuana is now legal in the state of Illinois. Are you thinking about moving Viola brands here in the state of Illinois?
Yes, we are. We plan on applying for, you know, some cultivation and some manufacturing licenses, you know, once that process opens up, and then also maybe some dispensing licenses. So, yeah, we definitely plan on moving our operations, you know, towards the East Coast. And, you know, obviously Illinois, I think, will be an unbelievable market, and especially with, you know, the purpose of our company, which is, you know, about uplifting, empowering, and educating, you know, the black community through cannabis. And you know, we feel like, you know, this is a market where, you know, we can do a lot of good. We can change a lot of lives. And, you know, we were praying and hoping that, you know, we're lucky enough, you know, to get one of these licenses here.
Al, one of the things that I read about you, a few of the things that I read about you, number one, you love your family. But number two, for a guy that didn't go to college, you're sure driven and you're always looking for the next. You're always one step ahead, it seems like.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, you know, I don't sleep, right? So I guess because I'm not sleeping all the time, I'm always thinking.
Yeah.
I'm just always trying to be progressive and just, you know, trying to figure out what's next. And, you know, like you say, like the biggest thing that drives me is not, you know, financial gain. Like I don't decide what I want to do off how much money I can make. I try to find things that I'm passionate about, because when you're passionate, then it's not like working. You know what I'm saying? I remember right. that with basketball. Like, I never worked a day in my life in my career. You know what I'm saying?
That's awesome.
I loved it. So that's kind of how I look for different opportunities now.
And you're going to the All-Star game tonight. Where are your seats? You played in the NBA for 16 years. You should be in the front row.
Nah, no front row tickets. I'm not big time. I'm not an A-list celebrity. But we'll probably just sit in the suite tonight and watch the game.
Did you go to any of the festivities on Friday or Saturday night?
I did not get a chance. So, obviously I was here kind of activating with my company, just raising some awareness.
Right.
You know, what we're doing and different things like that. So that had me wrapped up the whole time. But, you know, I will get a chance to break away for the game today, though.
What are you expecting? Because, of course, it's going to be all about Kobe. And is it the East that's wearing number 24 and the West is wearing number 2, or vice versa? A great tribute. They named the MVP trophy, the All-Star trophy, after him. What are you expecting? What are you expecting tonight? Just a whole lot of love, or what?
Yeah, I think it's gonna be a lot of love, man. You know, I think that, you know, hopefully we're at the point where now everybody can really just start celebrating Kobe,
right?
And you know what he made to, you know, to all of us as, you know, his competitors, and definitely as, you know, for the fan base. And I expect, you know, with Mamba mentality being, you know, the theme of this All-Star game, I would expect these guys to come out and play this like a real game.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I know normally we started off with all the dunks and all that kind of stuff, but,
yeah,
you know, I think if they want to really pay a tribute to Cole, you know, they should just play this like this is a game 7. And, like, let these guys really put it out there on the line tonight. So it'd be interesting to see which approach they make, but, you know, I definitely think it's going to come from more of a serious place, just because, you know, they represent Kobe, you know, and his legacy tonight.
You're right. Al, you're the best, man. When you're back in town, we got to get you up in studio. I know you're busy with All-Star festivities and you're heading over to the UC right now. Really appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, brother.
All right. That is Al Harrington, 16-year NBA veteran. If you want to check out his website, ViolaBrands.com.